Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff. Host Teresa Wilkie talks with Priya Sarathy Jones, the National Campaign Director at the Fines and Fees Justice Center. She works with national coalitions that address fines and fees reform and helps those who seek their expertise on fines and fees reform across the country. Host Latara Smith talks with Crystal Williams about her program, Crystal's Kids, about the need for mentors and role models for children of the incarcerated. They will be joined by Caden Smith to talk about his own experiences. Stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. We want to thank our engineer today, Keith Washburn. Now to Teresa and her guest.
Good morning. So today we're lucky to have on the phone Priya Sarathy Jones. Priya, are you online with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Why, thank you. Thank you for calling in. Priya is in Washington, D.C., and Fees and Fines Justice Center is located, virtually located, in New York City. And that's a place that seeks to catalyze a movement to eliminate the fees and fines that distort justice. Now, listeners, you know we talk about this quite a bit on Jaws of Justice. It's a huge social problem, and we're not alone. We're lucky to find the Fees and Fines Justice Center. Priya, say a few words about when the Fees and Fines Justice Center started.
Well, so it's the Fines and Fees Justice Center, and we started in April of 2018 when our two co-directors, Joanna Weiss and Lisa Foster, decided that this issue was pretty widespread and important enough that there should be an organization sort of solely dedicated to this aspect of criminal justice reform. And they decided to start up an organization that sort of set out to do a few things. One was establish a clearinghouse that is on our website that is a central location for basically all of the information out there, the research, the litigation, the policies, best practices, stories from impacted individuals that we know of, and data and research from around the country on the issue of fines and fees, and created a really great database that allows you to sort through this information based on topics, jurisdictions, and sort of cross-referencing. So this is a central hub for anybody in the field or advocates that are looking to find more information on the subject. The other sort of thing that the organization set out to do was actually just be, you know, some live humans that you could interact with in the space when folks had questions about the issues of fines and fees. There was a place that they could call. There were people that they could talk to who were subject matter experts in this particular area. And then thirdly, to provide what we call sort of technical assistance to advocates, states, local jurisdictions that are seeking to actually, catalyze reform in this area and make significant changes in how they go about funding their systems and looking at the implications of those practices. And so we offer, sometimes it's just a phone call and sometimes it's on the ground assistance to states looking to do this. So now we are located between Washington, D.C. and New York in regards to sort of the national work. And then we have actual state campaigns that we run on fines and fees reform in both New York and Florida, and we're looking to expand to one to two more states in 2020 and probably 2021 to do state-level campaigns on the ground in two more states as well.
And I thank you. And before we get to you, and you're very impressive, listeners, I misstated the name of this organization. It is Fines and Fees, and you can easily see them on the website at fjc.org. Isn't that your website, Priya?
It's actually, it's findsandfeesjusticecenter.org.
So you spell it out, fines and fees.
Spell it out, and fines and fees, the whole thing, .org, and you'll be able to, findsandfeesjusticecenter.org, and you'll be able to sort of see the clearinghouse and the campaigns and sort of all the information I just referred to on our website.
I guess one of the reasons I transversed it is because I think court fees start first, and then fines follow a conviction, but perhaps I'm wrong on that.
Right. So that's interesting, actually. Yeah. So the fine is the actual punitive measure of any particular crime that was committed. So when you call it a red light, and you get a ticket, or you're stopped for a moving violation, you'll get a ticket, and that ticket, there'll be a part of that ticket that is the fine. So the actual punitive measure for, breaking the ordinance or the law or whatever it may be. And there'll be a value to that. So in some places, that I believe, like in Kentucky, it is like call it $20. Like no tickets are really for these types of things are very expensive in and of itself. The ticket may be about $20, so that's the fine. But there are $143 worth of fees that are added on to every ticket. So the fees are all the other things that might get tacked on to the particular interaction with the criminal legal system. So you will have the punitive fine, the $20, and then that $143 in this example. I don't know specifically in Kentucky what are the various line items that make up the $143, but in several places that can look like anything. It could be that $5 goes to the DNA fund and $15 goes to a trauma victims fund, and $20 goes to the court fees, and $35 goes to the district attorney's office. Like there could be a series of things that are all being funded, from these interactions, and so then that particular fee structure is broken down even further. That each designation for the fee that gets broken out goes some other place. And so that is the fee aspect. So we as an institution believe that the fees are actually a regressive tax. And that it's only particularly charged for those that are using the system. And so these things, the actual things that the fees go to, are usually good things. It's not, like the trauma victim fund is great. The courts need to be funded. DNA and forensics facilities, they need funding. So it's not that those particular things are not important and valuable, but if they are, this is not the way to go about funding them. Those things should be funded from general funds, from tax bases, from a general pot that the state decides these things are important, and they are important to society and they should be funded, not on the backs of the people who are interacting with the system. And then on the fine side, we do believe that there needs to be, that there is a level of punitive aspect that makes sense, that really is why the system can work. But the question really becomes what is that number, and what does it look like? And when it's applied to different people, $20 is maybe nothing to a lot of people, but it could be a huge burden on someone who is already on government assistance, doesn't have a job, is barely sort of taking care of their own needs to begin with. $20 and then $143, it can be debilitating in their lives. And then, in all of these circumstances, when you don't pay the fines and fees up front, they double in most instances, interest accrues. You have other collateral consequences like driver's license suspensions that you may face as a result of not paying these fines and fees. And then those things have reinstatement fees and their own costs. So ultimately, you end up in this very expensive system for, what could have initially been, one sort of low-level mistake.
Thank you for that. And We at KKFI understand the problems of funds. We're talking on a system, Priya, where I can't interrupt you. You get to talk, and then I get to talk. When we get a better system, it will be more conversational. But take a few minutes, and we only have a few, excuse me, and tell us, when did you start with fines and fees? And you're the public relations. What's your job title?
So I started with the Fines and Fees Justice Center in May of this year. My job title is a national campaign director. And what that really means is I am the person in the organization that is responsible when we do have national level campaigns, and we have one right now, but also for all of the national work that we do. So all of these cities and organizations that we work with, and we look to provide assistance to, I'm sort of their point of entry, and I will work with them and talk to them about what their needs are, what they're looking for, and sort of provide them, along with my colleagues, Joanna and Lisa, more direct assistance on best practices, draft bill language. You know, it could be coming in and testifying and talking to legislators. You know, sort of we constructed in the way that is most beneficial to the asker. So whatever ways that we can be helpful that they see as a benefit to their efforts, that's how we like to help. We don't necessarily come in and say, like, this is the format, and this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to insert ourselves. We see ourselves as more of support and help to those on the ground that, and the state and local level, who are seeking to make changes, and then we provide assistance in the way that is most beneficial to them. I came over to the center from the Department of Justice, United States Department of Justice, where I was for almost a decade, and I worked on a variety of issues, but towards the end of my career there, I worked on the fines and fees issue that the department had sort of taken under the past administration, the previous administration, when there was an investigation in Missouri of the Mike Brown shooting in Ferguson. One of the most interesting and insightful pieces of information that came from that DOJ investigation was around the police practices report. And in that report, what we found out was that Ferguson was relying excessively on the use of fines and fees in their system to fund their actual criminal justice system. So I believe the number was around 27% of their budget came from fines and fees. And what that ended up meaning in Ferguson was that, you know, man, woman, and child had three warrants on them. It came out to, if you broke down the numbers, because they were using these fines and fees and over policing these communities and charging people with all types of, you know, sort of you broke the law. You know, it's the equivalent of like jaywalking. Your lawn, your grass is too high. Like every sort of nuisance thing that big fine, they would stop people, they would cite people, and then they use that as an opportunity to make revenue for their systems. And so what we also discovered is that that was not unique to Ferguson. So while there was an investigation that stemmed from an incident with the police department, what that investigation really showed us is this is not something that is unique to Ferguson. This is happening all over the country. And when you have that type of interaction between police and the communities that they serve, where there's that much excessive policing, that's that much encounter with the community and law enforcement, sort of undermines the legitimacy of the law enforcement department to begin with, and then it breaks down, it really breaks down the communication and relationships between communities and police, and that just sort of furthers to perpetuate a lot of the turmoil that already exists on that front.
Thank you for that. I want to transition to your national campaign, which is Free to Drive. What mm-hmm. you learned is 44 out of 50 states allow government to suspend a person's driver's license for unpaid court fees and fines. And so then, not only does a person have an incumbent fee and fine unpaid, and they need to have a job to pay that debt. They don't have a way to get to work because their driver's license is suspended. So, Priya, how in the world did this begin in the United States? How did we come to this?
So originally, driver's licenses were suspended for public safety issues. So anytime that there was someone on, you know, that was a danger to the road, to the people on the road, to themselves, we would suspend their licenses because we all know that vehicles can be very dangerous in the wrong hands and use it, you know, when they're used recklessly. And so that made sense. But then what sort of system started to find was they could start suspending driver's licenses as another mechanism to generate revenue. So there's a few things that folks thought when they started that. They thought, hey, if you don't pay, that must be intentional. It must be you trying to skirt around your obligations. And sort of this narrative was painted that people who don't pay these fines and fees and costs, they are just trying to get around the system. They're trying to get around the laws. And so we'll punish them. We'll take away their driver's licenses because that will get them to pay. So if we sort of take something from you that is essential to your life, then you'll go ahead and pay, right? So it was, they thought that that was the mechanism. And also when they do that, they thought, hey, when you want to get it back, we'll also charge you a fee to get it back. So this is another, you know, touch point for us to make money. But what we found is that when licenses are getting suspended for this reason, for reasons that are related to unpaid fines and fees, it's not because people are intentionally trying to not pay their debts or their obligations. It's because they cannot. It's because this situation is so expensive, and the tickets, the cost of tickets have gone up so much in places or issue them over the last, you know, 15 years, and the use of that system has gone up. You've seen red light cameras. You sort of see electronic measures that allow like cities to start doing this practice without even using law enforcement. So just this use of this practice, and then when folks don't pay, and they don't pay sometimes because they don't know, they don't pay a lot of times because they just don't have it, and these dollar amounts are so expensive that we kind of get into the place where we are now, where cities and states are using it, thinking that it's a tool that coerces people to pay their debts, when in fact that is not actually the impact of having this practice. And what ends up happening is it creates a lot more complications and a lot more problems for folks, because once you get behind the wheel, once your driver's license is suspended and you are pulled over for any particular reason, the driving without a license is a criminal offense. And so now you are entangled in the criminal legal system for something that was a financial issue for you. So your inability to pay the debt, but you still need to drive, because we do know that most people, 83% of Americans drive. They need to drive for their jobs. They need to drive to get their kids to school, to go to the doctor, to get the groceries. And then especially when you're talking about places that are not sort of like urban hubs that may have public transportation and other forms of transportation. And we do now know that even those places, like, for example, in D.C., if you want to live near a bus line that gets you places, if you want to live near a metro, those homes and those apartments are some of the most expensive in the city. So it's not the people who have more challenging economic circumstances that are even able to take advantage of that. Those folks end up having to live further from good, reliable city transportation. And then once again, they're sort of required to drive to take care of any of their daily functions, which is illegal for them at this point.
It really creates a divide between the people and law enforcement. I live in a relatively small town. It's 100,000 people, not teeny weeny. And we had an event in March of this year where our local police saw a gentleman driving. And because of the size of the community, I believe they suspected he had a suspended driver's license, because they suspended it and tried to pull him over. And then he was acting aghast and unhappy. And one thing led to the other, and there was a shooting. And I'm happy to say there's no death. But, I mean, these things just echo the impact on the person. You were good to point out that not everyone has fees and fines because of criminal offenses. Some people have it for other debt. They might have it for real estate transactions. They might have it for domestic issues. And then they lose their driver's license, and then they become criminals. So I see you're looking at 44 states out of 50, you're looking at a very large mess. Now, the few states that don't have these statutes, how do they try to collect unpaid court fees and fines?
So we're saying that several of the states that are not doing this practice are recent, so 2018 and 2019. So we only flagged six to begin with that are not doing it in any way. And I believe at least four to five of them have only been over the last 2 years. So we are now seeing in those states that have chosen to acknowledge that this is more damaging than it is good and not suspend driver's licenses for this. So in California, which is the first place that we actually have real data because of when they stopped suspending and 2017, I believe, and then in June, and their fiscal year starts on July 1st. So we've been able to see an entire fiscal year of collections since that practice ended. And what we found in California is they did not collect less money. Their collections roughly stayed the same, and they categorize their debt into two sort of categories.
Priya, I'm going to interrupt you. We have just a very few minutes, and on the story of California, your point is you're making your point. So your website is finesandfees.justicecenter.org, and is there any chance you might pick Missouri and Kansas? We have some very good recent legislation in the Missouri Supreme Court, in the Kansas legislature. I shout out to Aletha Foster-Godeau, and perhaps
so
you'll consider us.
We will not be coming to Kansas because Kansas has a great on-the-ground advocate, Kansas Appleseed, is a great organization, and they are going to be taking this issue on, and they're going to be working on this legislatively. And so we're here to support them, and we are in touch with them, and we work together with them. But they are going to be pursuing driver's license suspension changes in your state, and we believe they'll be able to achieve it, and we're here to support them as they go about those efforts.
Right. I've just been told we have another 2 minutes. And
okay.
So take your time and explain clearly to us how you believe local people can be involved with this issue of free to drive. Now, looking at the website and going to free to drive, you can see some local stories. Most mm-hmm. people are aware of others who have their driver's license suspended for unpaid court fees and fines. It's common, and I congratulate you for the good work you're doing.
Well, thank you. And in regards to folks getting involved, the coalition itself is organizations on the ground that are working. And so I suggest that any local advocate or any individual who really is passionate about this issue get in contact with their local organizations that are seeking to pursue legislative change and see the best way for them to be involved. Another one is for impacted individuals, as difficult as it has been, they've been the catalyst behind this movement because it's their stories that really are shaping what's happening in the field, because we see that this policy, how it's hurting folks. And I think once you can put the names and the faces and the stories to this policy, you can it just gets rid of this notion that these are folks that are trying to get around the law or skirt around their obligations. But these are just everyday folks like the rest of us who are working hard and trying to do right by their families and by themselves. And things like this are just major setbacks in their lives and their pursuit to just meet their obligations and live a whole and healthy and happy life. And they are not sort of criminals who are out here trying to be menaces to society, but they're real people that are detrimentally impacted with their access to everyday things, including healthcare, by these policies. And I think that is one of the biggest things that can be useful to local advocates and folks working on the ground is get in touch with the people that this is impacting, find their stories, and make them a part of your work for change.
Right on. Thank you for being our guest, Priya. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Thank you for having me.
Now, the calendar for the week of November 4th. Corey's Network invites survivors of murder to their weekly workshop to learn how to deal with grief, the media, police investigations, court, and moving forward after a homicide has occurred. This week's guests will be from Missouri Probation and Parole. The workshop will be held tonight, Monday, November 4th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Church of the Four Corners, 14300 East U.S. Highway 40, Independence, Missouri. The church is located east of the Hy-Vee on Highway 40 and Nolum Road. For more information and listing of future workshops, call 816-834-9161 or look for Corey's Network on Facebook. The Metropolitan Organization for Racial and Economic Equality, Moore Squared, will have their monthly Kansas Issues meeting on Monday, November 4th, 6 to 8 p.m. at First Baptist Church, 500 Nebraska Avenue, Kansas City, Kansas. Indivisible KC is an area-wide progressive all-volunteer organization whose mission is to empower everyday people to build a more equal and just future for all of us. IKC invites all to a presentation of Defeating Today's White Nationalism at the Westport Presbyterian Church, 201 Westport Road, KCMO, Thursday, November 7th, from 7 to 9 p.m. Come learn about organized white nationalist groups and why counteracting their movement matters in the fight to advance the democratic rights of all Americans. See details at IndivisibleKC on Facebook or their website, indivisiblekc.org. Tuesday, November 7th, 9 a.m. to noon, is the weekly Willow Domestic Violence Center drop-in at the Lawrence Public Library, 707 Vermont, Lawrence, Kansas. Mothers of Incarcerated Sons and Daughters will have their monthly meeting Saturday, November 9th, from noon to 1:30 p.m. at the Waldo Branch Library, 201 East 75th Street, KCMO. If you have a loved one who is incarcerated and need advice and support, MISD has members that may be able to help. Their website is misdkc.org. Level Up Anti-Racism Training is about the school-to-prison pipeline. It's on Saturday, November 9th, from noon to 2 p.m. at the Equal Minded Cafe, 4327 Troost Avenue, KCMO. This event is sponsored in part by Real Justice Network, who are working to stop black and brown youth from finding themselves disproportionately affected by the school-to-prison pipeline. My name is Jeff, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website. That's kkfi.org. Up next is Latara and her guest.
Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to KKFI 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project, and this morning I am blessed with the opportunity to interview Miss Crystal Williams of Crystal's Kids. Thank you, Crystal, for coming in today and
Thanks
interviewing
me.
With me. I also have my daughter who doesn't want to be on camera, my lovely daughter, Kaven Smith. Kaven, thank you for coming in and talking with me and Crystal today. Today we are going over, we want to talk about a new program that Crystal has now called Crystal's Kids. And, you know, Crystal, I want to commend you for putting together this program and wanting to sow seed in the lives of the youth here in Kansas City. I know your program is rather new, so can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you're going to be doing with your program, Crystal's Kids?
Well, primarily, it's for children that have parents that are incarcerated to be able to vent, to have someone to talk to be able to kind of relax, bounce some things off, because I've been incarcerated.
Yes.
But I never had to worry about a lot of things, but I saw a lot of people whose children went through things, and I would get out and they would say, hey, will you go check on my child or whatever, whatever.
Yes.
And I looked up one day and I just had a passion to help the youth. And I started like 20 years ago because it's very, and then the world that we're living in now is so much different.
Yes,
than
is.
The world I lived in. You have social media. You know, a lot of the things didn't have so much exposure, but the kids were still suffering. But now it's like they're suffering in a fishbowl.
Right.
You know, and Their identity is wrapped up in either my mama's in prison, my daddy's in prison, but what about me? Where's my fun? Where can, you know? And then another thing, they don't like to worry their caretakers.
Right.
So what a lot of people don't see is that they're hurting, but they love their caretaker so much, they don't want to burden them with, I'm feeling some type of way. So Crystal's Kids will give them an opportunity to do that. I've always had a passion to help children because I was blessed to have a mother that know how to love me unconditionally. So even when the world had a hold of me, I wasn't affected.
Yes.
But I saw what it did to a lot of people, and I guess I got that empathy and compassion from my mother. And it's just something that I feel like we have to do because I feel like nobody can save our kids but us.
Right. You know, and I totally agree with you. And I also feel like, or actually I know, that children who have incarcerated parents, they get left behind.
Yes.
They get left behind and they go through a whole lot while their parent is incarcerated. And also a reality for some children, especially if their parents were indicted in the federal system. Sometimes you have a mother and a father who fall on the same case, on the same indictment. So you have both parents taken away from those children.
And one
and
is
that's
in one
really
town
tough.
And one is way
right.
over there.
Right, one could be in one state and one could be in another state,
you
know. So programs for children, mentoring programs for children who have incarcerated parents is most definitely needed.
Yes.
And I'm excited about you coming on board and doing your program. I know that we were discussing some of your plans with the tutoring program.
Yes.
Your plans. You have an upcoming event on the 23rd of
November,
right? You want to tell the people a little bit about that?
It's where we're going to take, I think it's 20 children.
Yes.
Out to Worlds of Fun for what they call the Winter Fest. That, now, y'all get a big laugh on that because, see, I'll be scared of falling. And to take them out to eat. And really what that does is what I'm really trying to do.
Kind of an icebreaker to get to know the group of kids.
And get to know the children. Because as I said, children, they're resilient, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
But when they're hurting and they're going through a lot of things, they go in and out of different relationships with other people.
Yes, they do.
You know, they meet this person, they meet that person. They want you to say this, they want you to say that. And still, it's like they're lost.
Right.
And they still don't want to worry the caregiver because the caregiver got to make things happen and run things and stuff like that. So I feel like they can get together and have that little camaraderie. say some things to each other that I might not even know, make some
friendships
and make some, you know, confidants and things like that. And my passion has always been kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, at the risk of sounding arrogant, I think that I was born to help children. And also it helps me because I can't, I've never been able to be a hypocrite. So as long as I'm doing something like this, I ain't just wanting to help you. You'll be helping me to help me stay on my grind, to help me stay balanced, to help me realize, hey, you don't want to go back to there, or you don't want to. I don't want to tell this child, hey, don't do this, don't do that, and I do it.
Right.
So
exactly.
That's why I, you know, everybody tell, why do you volunteer and why do you do this and you don't get paid and you do that, because it saves my life. You know, it saves my life because I have to have a routine and I have to help. And before, that's how I got in trouble.
Well, you know what? I think it's very important what you're wanting to do with children. I know that we do have other groups that work with children, you know, who have incarcerated parents here in Kansas City. So shout out to those groups and group leaders as well. But we need more.
Yes.
Because we have so many children who have parents that are gone to prison. And whenever you have an absent parent, when you have a parent out of the home, you know, sometimes both parents, as we just stated, then these children are in the hands of caregivers and caretakers.
Right.
And like I said, many of them have left behind. With the tutoring program, you know, connecting with some retired school teachers, that's awesome, that are going to come in and tutor the children. The letter writing program, where they can come in. And, you know, you guys are going to provide the stamps and the letters and the paper, and they're able to write their parent so they can communicate with them. And just last night, we had a wonderful lady by the name of Gloria Smith reached out to us and said, you know, hey, I want to help with transportation to take the children to see their parents.
That's awesome.
It's awesome how everybody's coming together to help you to put the program together. And that's what it takes, because as a community, our youth is getting involved in so much. And I guarantee you, if you sit the majority of these children down who are getting into things, they probably more than likely have a parent who has gone to prison.
Or something.
Right.
Doing things incarcerated, that might lead them,
you know,
to
or a parent leading, you know, dealing with addiction or whatever the case may be. And of course, we know if a person deals with addiction, then prison for them is right around the corner. It's right there. It's bound to happen. Now, you know, my daughter, who's with us today, my daughter has a father. My ex-husband is actually incarcerated in Texas and has been for several years now. And so my daughter is, you know, a child who has an incarcerated parent. So, Kevin, I want to ask you real quick, do you think that mentoring programs for children with incarcerated parents will be helpful?
Yes, I think it will, because sometimes kids just need that extra attention, and I feel like this will provide this for them.
Provide it for them?
Yes.
Okay, so you think we have a need here? Okay.
Yes.
You think you would benefit from some of those programs?
Yes, ma'am, I would.
Okay. So, see, that's awesome, you guys. We're actually, and I didn't put, you know, we're Facebook Live as well. I didn't put the camera on because she asked me not to. But, you know, that's coming from the mouth of a babe.
That's right.
Saying that, yes, you know, we need that program. Kevin, do you think that the program for children with incarcerated parents, the transportation that Ms. Gloria has offered, do you think that would be good for the children to be able to go see their parents? I know for you it's more difficult because we have to travel 13 hours to see your dad, and we're actually going to take that trip here in a couple of weeks. But so for you it's different. But what about the youth that live here in Kansas City? Do you think that, you know, how do you think they would feel now that they have the opportunity to board that bus and go see their parent?
I think it will make them feel great, because me personally, if I had that opportunity, I would take it, because sometimes just that little bit of attention or seeing them can just give you hope.
Yes. And once again, that's from the mouth of a baby.
And another thing also is, you know, we're at the time of the year, I don't know if people, a lot of people are familiar with the seasonal affective disorder that is very prevalent with the, and it leads more to like the depression and things like that. The holidays are coming up. I am not social. I know a little bit about social media. However, sometimes the social media, in some ways, I think is good, but in other ways, I think that it diminishes their ability to be able to have eye contact, a hug, shake
right.
a hand,
yes.
to you know,
yes.
and so they not really, really expressing themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel that we have got to do something to save our kids, because nobody can save our kids but us.
Right.
And when I say that, I mean all of us.
Right.
When I say that to other parents that have been inside, I say that to all of us.
Right.
When I say that to the grandparents that don't understand what's going on, I mean, that's all of us. And I just feel like that's what I'm here to do, because our children, I do not want them to get lost, because I know what that's like.
Right, yes. Yeah. And, you know, I want to say this to the parents who are out, who may still be kind of, you know, what they call it, straddling the fence,
yeah.
with the possibility that
yeah.
you may go back. I want to say this to you all. Just recently, my ex-husband was denied parole through the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. And my daughter just inquired with me about it. And mm-hmm. I had to tell her that her father was denied parole.
Yeah.
And that literally yeah. crushed my daughter. And that's,
yeah.
you know, partially why she's,
yes.
you know, so kind of dealing with a lot mm-hmm. of emotions
right.
even today. As you can see, she's teary-eyed here
yeah.
in the studio. And I most definitely understand that. And we have more children that are in that same situation. So I just want to say to the parent who is straddling the fence, think about your child.
That's right.
Think about what they're going through, what they go without, you know, their feelings. Every young girl needs their dad.
Yes.
You know, every girl and boy needs their mom.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes, you know, we got to kind of pull away from our little selfish whatever we have
mm-hmm.
going on and say, you know, hey, you know, we're going to get it together, because at the end of the day, our children are paying the price. And then
exactly.
I want to say this, when you have situations where parents who were in prison for multiple years, who were innocent and wrongly convicted,
right.
who were unjustly taken away from their families, and they're
yes,
in
yes.
prison. You know, it makes me think of, you know, maybe Ricky Kidd or Daryl Burton, or
right.
I don't know if Lamont McIntyre had children, but even if he had children, I would even consider say him as well. Any parent who is taken away from their child, locked up in prison for something that they didn't do.
I can't even imagine.
Can you imagine? They're already away from them. Okay, then they get out and they've got to put their lives back together. And they
right.
also have got to put their lives back together with their children.
Right.
And that is extremely, extremely
right.
hard to do. So just a quick note to the parents who are kind of straddling the fence.
Right.
Please stop straddling the fence and think about your children, because at the end of the day, they pay for your choices and your decisions.
Right.
You know, that was enough for me to get my act together and not return to the federal system or state system. When I knew that my children had went through so many challenges and changes
right.
while I was gone, the 10 and a half months that I was incarcerated, there was no way. There was no way that
right.
I was going to nothing, okay,
right.
connecting with the wrong person, whatever. I'm totally staying away from it, because I saw the devastation that came upon my children
right.
while I was gone.
And you know, the funny thing about that is, that's a blessing that you got it the first time.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a chronic recidivist, and people, you know, will say, how she keep coming back? She, you know, you got a revolving door in and out.
Right.
And I didn't even understand why I kept doing it, you know. And so when you have parents that straddling the fence.
Their kids don't understand. Why are they keep doing this?
And they don't understand either. And so I think that anybody that's doing reentry and stuff like that, that's a good thing, because they have to be reintegrated back in. And then also when you're dealing with people that's their family. Like I had a lot of friends that was from the projects or this and that, and their rites of passage was selling the first bag of weed or getting their first gun. This was how they got close to their parents.
Right.
And this was their duty, and if they didn't want to do that, they were ostracized.
Right, right.
You know, so there's just so many different dynamics that can have to do with this thing, and I just know that I don't know everything, and I've had academics and all of that, but when you're dealing with those type of things and you're dealing with children, you have to have a very good understanding. Like
my daughter's sitting here shaking her head. She's shaking her head.
But everything that she said today, she says, because I need that extra time or I want somebody to hear me.
Right.
And that's what it means. And then, I like when I was sharing with you outside, you know, she probably worries about you.
Yeah.
She might not want to tell you things. She see you out here grinding and helping people
yes.
and stuff like that. So sometimes do you ever feel like, well, I don't even want to bother, worry my mom with this because she got this going up?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
So that's why right. Crystal's kids, I want to be able
and
to help them to articulate.
She could talk. Through your program, right.
And then she could articulate maybe with you, letting her know how you feel without feeling like you're going to hurt her. And it's not something that'll happen overnight.
Right.
You know,
because one thing with my daughter, KK, who's here with us today, you know, she wasn't born even when I went to do that time, but mm-hmm. I even see the after effects with my adult mm-hmm. offspring. They are still dealing with things right. from when I was
yes.
incarcerated.
Yes.
So this stuff affects them over into
down.
Their adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
My daughters, you know, they have some men problems.
Mm-hmm.
My son, they have some trust problems.
Mm-hmm.
They have some anger issues because they're hurt. You know, mom left us. Mom
mm-hmm.
was gone. Family didn't do us right. Many times that
yeah.
happened. You know, my children, a couple of them was homeless while
yeah.
I was incarcerated because family didn't take them in
right.
or they took them in for a certain amount of time.
Right.
Once they used up, you know,
the
my
resources,
they put them on out.
Yeah.
I mean, this
yeah.
is real talk. You know, when I got out of prison and I heard my son tell me, Mom, you know, we were sleeping in on park
mm-hmm.
benches and sleeping in cars, infant cars, and you know, we stole food sometimes out of the store
right.
to eat. As a mom, that hit me in
right.
my gut. What was worth it that I left my babies in this type of situation?
Right.
So, you know, that was enough for me
mm-hmm.
not to you know,
right.
no, it just wasn't gonna happen. I had to get it right, and I've kept it right by the grace of God, you know. But Kaven, is there anything else that you wanna say? What would you tell maybe some of the children who have parents that are in prison? Do you have a message of hope or anything that you want to give them?
Well, like what Ms. Crystal said about parents who are coming back from prison and then they go connect with a bad person or do bad things, they should always think of their child. Because I know from my dad going back and forth, I've always thought, am I not good enough?
Right.
Right.
Is it me? Am I not good enough? Does he not want to come back to me?
Right.
Yeah.
And I want all the kids to know out there that it's not you. It's just they're struggling.
That's it.
And they're going straight back to what they used to know.
Right.
They don't know nothing else from that.
You go, girl. Look at my baby. You go. I know that took a lot for you to say that.
Yes.
And I so appreciate you for that, Kaven. I really do. And she said it. Once again, from
yes.
the mouth of a babe.
Yes.
You know, she said it. And this has to be one of the most emotional radio shows or interviews I've ever done the entire time that I've been on KKFI. You know, because one thing I am is I try to be very transparent. You know,
yes.
people see me on the forefront, on the front line, fighting for those who are innocent
right.
or wrongly convicted. But I have fights in my own home
that's
as
right.
well.
Yeah.
I have fights with my offspring, not physical fights,
right.
but I mean, and some of this is residue from things that happened
exactly.
while I was incarcerated
right.
or even seeing my daughter go through this because
yeah.
my ex-husband has made choices not
right.
to walk free of drug addiction. So it keeps him going back and back and back.
And that's very hard.
And it's hard. It's
yes.
hard on her
yes.
more so than it is on the parent because parents can get used to prison. You know,
mm-hmm.
we can do some time.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to go in there and get the commissary. And
mm-hmm.
we know how to stay out the hole, and
mm-hmm.
we know how to do those things.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the child is out here left in the community trying to work and make it happen for themselves and trying to figure out everything and connect the dots. So, Crystal, I applaud you for
thank
what
you
are doing. I know that you have a website that's going to be coming up, and we'll get that website to Jeff.
Because
you
know,
you gotta help Miss Crystal put a website together.
Because you already know, hey, I'm not, you know, I want to say this. I was very fearful about trying to do anything. I've just been doing like volunteer
yes.
for different places, and my nieces and them had nonprofits because I had a fear of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Academically, at the risk of sounding arrogant, I'm pretty sharp academically.
Right.
But technologically, I'm preschooler. So I just, you know, I'm just saying, I don't know how to do the emails or whatever. See, back in my day,
we're going to help you. We're going to help you with all that. And, okay. and Miss Guru over here, Miss
right.
Computer Guru can
see.
Do everything.
Okay.
Between her and Paris and London, I think you're
right.
going to be okay.
Yeah, and that made me feel better because the need is so great. And I would like to, I know that we have other organizations. I would like for maybe, for some of them maybe to get in touch and we could collaborate with each other. Because
right.
my thing is I'm not into competing with anybody. I'm into trying to save these kids. And only one group can't help. So all of us, I want to do it maybe the way we could collaborate on some things, you know. And just, let's just do this because these kids is getting lost. And,
right, and they are.
And they can't, it ain't like it was. When we got lost, you just go, your big mama snatch you up and tap you up a little bit and, you know, whatever,
right.
whatever.
But it's a different
it's
kind
different
of
now.
This day. You
yeah.
know, yesterday my daughter Camille, she saw the post on Facebook about the trip to Worlds of Fun, and she said, Mom, this is really great. And I came on the post and I said to her, I said, baby, you know, I would have loved for something like this
right.
to be something that you guys could have attended while, you know, I was gone, because I know that it was rough for y'all.
Yeah.
And my daughter came back and said, yes, it was, you know, because like I said, when I left, I had, you know, six children, and they were all separated and taken
right.
different places. Some of them were in better places than the other. So, you know, once again, even having some grandchildren who mm-hmm. have parents who are incarcerated,
right.
you know, it's just, it's an issue.
Yes.
So, you know, we only have a few minutes left, so I want to take this time as we're going out to just commend you and thank you for your program. Everyone, look forward. It's Crystal's Kids. She's got a website, Crystal's Kids. It's www.crystalskidskc.com that's coming out. She's putting that together. Her Facebook page should be up and going by the end of the week. And Crystal has her first, where she's joining forces with the Casey Freedom Project. And we're
yes.
sponsoring 20 children. We're taking them to Worlds of Fun on Saturday, November 23rd. And before that, we're going to take them. We're going to have us a pit stop by the, what is it? Pizza Street Buffet.
Yeah.
So we can get their bellies full, and then we'll go and have a good time at the park. And, you know, from 4 to 10. And we're going to be even providing, even transportation will be provided. So,
yeah.
you
and
know.
That's always a big issue for a lot of people, too.
Right.
Transportation.
Right. And so, you know, we'll have more specifics, I think you said, on the transportation coming out
right.
here. We've
right.
got to work out a few little pick up and drop off spots or whatnot. But, you know, I think it's a wonderful program. The tutoring, the
yes.
mentoring, the letter writing program.
Yeah.
You know,
and then
we
recreational,
we
blow off
recreational
some steam,
programs.
Try to have a little fun.
Right.
It's just for a minute, just not. You know, it's always going to be on your mind. You're going to miss. But, you know, sometimes they just need that to be able to get away just for a minute and be a kid.
Right.
Not
right.
a kid whose parent is gone. Not a kid. Just let me just be a kid tonight and kick it.
Right.
You know?
Right. So, you guys, Crystal, good job. Thank you for thinking about our youth.
Thank you
for having a heart to want to help. Because, like I said, I do feel that children, our group of children who have incarcerated parents, many times
mm-hmm.
they are left behind, but now
right.
we have another group in our community who will be doing something special with these children, helping them.
Right.
Kaven, I thank you for coming on and being a voice for the young people, because
right.
that's exactly what you were today. You were a powerful voice
right.
for the youth, and I appreciate you for that. I know we kind of had a rocky start this morning, but we made it and we pulled
yeah.
through, and you
yeah.
did an awesome job, sweetheart. And I just want to take the time and thank you for that. Okay? So, once again, www.crystalskidskc.com. The website will be up and going here this week. We appreciate you, Crystal. Everyone,
you
have a blessed and wonderful day. And we would like to thank Keith for working with us today. We appreciate you. Everyone, thank you for tuning in to KKFI 90.1 FM, Jaws of Justice.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Today we're recycling a 15-year-old editorial from the Drug Truth Network.
The only basis, the only reason for the continuation of this drug war is greed. Pure, unadulterated greed. Asking a member of law enforcement what we should do about the drug war is like asking your barber if you need a haircut. Seeking the advice of a treatment provider is a similar exercise in futility. Despite the machinations and distortion of the black market, deaths from the use of heroin remain on par with deaths from aspirin and Tylenol. There is no grace, no bonus, no success whatsoever derived from the current drug war policies. Now, to address the major problems, the U.S. policy of not allowing needle exchange means addicts often share both needle and life expectancies with each fix of heroin or amphetamine. AIDS and hepatitis C are slowly reaping their harvest of death because of moral crusaders whose true bigotry and religious intolerance shows their true compassion for their fellow man. In prison, the inmates who came in as pot growers or minor dealers are often turned on to the joys, the temporary escape of heroin, oftentimes smuggled in by the prison guards. Of course, the lack of needle exchange in prison means tens of thousands of prisoners released each year are returning to their families with a dose of a communicable and life-threatening disease. In the U.S., more than 100,000 male-on-male rapes are reported each year in our prisons, and one can only assume that many more rapes go unreported. This is not the genocide of Hitler, Pol Pot, or Milosevic. This is not the extermination of Auschwitz, or even quite the horror of Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, though naked romps with prisoners seems quite popular here as well. We must acknowledge the diversity of the horrors inflicted, the tens of millions arrested and incarcerated, the inmates and their families demonized and destroyed. We must see prohibition for what it is, a hopeless failure turned into a knowing, blatant, and horrible infliction of pain and misery on our fellow man for a profit.
And we'll close out with this little ditty.
Building the prisons nationwide. More drug war, more. Stuffing the prisoners deep inside. More drug war, more.
Folks, by now you know the whole truth about the drug war. It's time you did something about it. I am Dean at drugtruth.net.
Sitting here in my problem. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.